I did about $10 million in revenue, for sure. About $3.5 million every year for the last 3 years.
Have you ever wanted to be a business owner?
And that's what I like about football and business. You can build yourself into anything. Just because you start off as a small 100-pound kid, you leave 235 pounds big because you put the work in.
And transportation is very difficult with all the overhead and all the costs that you'll incur getting started.
This has been one of the best opportunities for me. I don't even know if I would have ever gotten into entrepreneurship if it wasn't for this program.
And today we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about becoming an Amazon DSP.
Think of it as you're a franchise owning a fleet of trucks for Amazon operating under their umbrella.
We're here with Sydney Tarver of People First Logistics, and he's going to talk about his incredible journey in becoming a DSP from working with Amazon to actually becoming a business owner.
I was trying to go the corporate route. I wanted to keep elevating in corporate America, but that wasn't my calling. I wanted to get to that $100,000 a year job. I don't know why that was the dream, but I only got to $72,000. So I took that leap of faith and started my own business where I could get myself a raise.
This is Sydney Tarver, the owner of People First Logistics. You're now watching Truck and Hustle.
All right, so now you're a business owner, man. You get started with Amazon DSP. Tell me a little bit about what Amazon DSP is and about just their business model.
Amazon DSP, that's the Amazon Delivery Service Provider Program. They get you started, like we said, the franchise model. So think of it as you're a franchise owning a fleet of trucks for Amazon operating under their umbrella. So basically, you're getting paid by the hour to do the service for Amazon, and per package piece, they give you a few incentives. So you're just working directly with Amazon, and they're paying you to provide a service for them. My specific DSP uses cargo vans, but they have every level. They have cargo vans, they have box trucks, and they have an 18-wheeler component to the DSP program. So if you apply, it's different websites, but logistics.amazon.com is for the sprinters and the box trucks. And then they have the Amazon Freight Partner Program, which is what they do with the branded 18-wheelers for Amazon.
Bigger 18-wheelers.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. So when you first get started, how many trucks do they start you off with? Is this something that's kind of your choice, or do they just like give you a certain amount of trucks to get started? No. Tell me about the vans.
The vans, well, they want to get you to 20. So the baseline is 20, but you're going to start with five, and they might deliver you five every week for 5 weeks. So you start with five routes for 2 weeks, and then you build up to 10 routes for 2 weeks, then 15 routes for 2 weeks, then you get to 20. And then based on your performance, they can go up from 20. So if you're doing good, like we say, you get that volume share, you can go up to 25, 30, 35, 40. You keep progressing. If that scorecard is right, if you're hitting fantastic on all your metrics and KPIs, fantastic, fantastic plus, they're going to give you more volume. So the better you perform, the more volume you get, the worse you perform, they can take away the routes. It's in the contract.
All right, let's dive into the scorecard a little bit. When you have the poor to fantastic, fantastic plus, so that you said, do you typically run Fantastic Plus? Where does People First usually?
Usually I get Fantastic. It just depends on the season. Like, okay, I'm gonna give you an example. If I'm running 20, 25, 30 routes, I can hit Fantastic to Fantastic Plus all the time. It's when you ramp to that 40 and 50 route, when you just hiring anybody off the street, they come because you want to get your volume of routes up. You might stretch you to scale to train the drivers. You might get a little rough running like peak season. I might run like great, fantastic, because we just added 20 more people, 20, 40 more people in a 2 week span. Mm. Where, yeah, we need the people, but we got to still lock in with the quality. You got to keep working them in like that because you might not have got the same training that everybody else got. So usually around peak season is when I kind of fall off and I just play the numbers game because I'm trying to run the most routes as possible.
And that's probably everybody,
yeah,
right? Because if you're adding more people, you don't have the time to train them. They're newer drivers, so they're kind of just going out there and they don't really know what they're doing. So, of course, more mistakes are going to happen. So I'm sure that's not with you. That's probably everybody.
Not for sure.
Right? Got it. Now, what about equipment like maintenance and all that? Is that something that you have to take care of, or is that something that Amazon does for you?
Like driver damage. If my driver wrecks a vehicle, I have to pay it. We bill it with insurance, but routine maintenance, oil changes, tire balancing, the routine maintenance, Amazon, we have an Element fleet card, and we partner with Pep Boys, and we can get all the routine maintenance done for free. Amazon pays for that.
Okay. Is there any specific type of insurance you have to have required?
You have to have $1 million cargo insurance. So you have to have a $1 million policy, auto, GL, I think it's like three different ones. With whatever the, yeah, you have to have like a $1 million cargo policy though, for sure.
Okay, and when you got started, did they help you with those resources or did you have to find that out on your own?
No, Amazon, I'm telling you, they give you the list for vendors, for body shops in your area. They give you insurance people to reach out to. If you want to get your employees health insurance, they give it workers' comp insurance. They give you all the vendors for everything that you're going to need. It's basically a business in a box. You just have to come in there and bring your leadership skills and bring your energy and lead the team.
Got you. But you're negotiating like price and stuff like that with these different vendors?
Yeah. Or you can use Amazon's vendor because it's more of a set rate. But yeah, then if you know some, your brother got an insurance trucking company, you can go with them if it covers all the qualifications.
What'd you have to do to transition from an employee to a business owner with Amazon?
They put you in about a 2 or 3 week onboarding program once you go. So they're helping you get your LLC, they're helping you get your business bank account, they're helping you get your DOT number, your FCM. They're putting you on they're giving you all the steps to do this, and they got a coach that's leading your way through it, holding your hand. They don't just hang you out to dry. That's why I tell people to partner with $1 billion companies, because they already have the infrastructure and the know-how, and you're not just guessing at it. It's already a franchise format, like McDonald's, cookie cutter A, B, C, D process, and then you'll have your own company.
Yeah, so it's literally like a franchise,
yeah,
basically. So they connect you with all the resources, everything from the legal aspect of forming the company to equipment, resources, maintenance, everything. They're just like handing it to you.
Right.
Got it. Okay, so you said that's like 2 weeks, a 2 week program?
Yeah, they give you a 2 week onboarding program. And from the time I quit in March to I quit Amazon in March 2020, and I launched my company in July 28th, 2020. So 3 months from quitting, I was able to launch with Amazon.
People First Logistics is born.
Yeah.
So when you out the gate, what do you start out with?
Five routes, about 10 drivers. I mean, everybody starts with five. Even if you had 20 drivers, it's just start with five and see if you can do this.
Okay, so five routes and 10 drivers.
Yeah.
So you had to hire those drivers prior to starting, obviously. Yes. So that was all a part of the onboarding process in that 3 weeks. You had to run ads to get drivers.
Definitely.
How did that work?
Running ads. I had to move to Buffalo from Atlanta, get a condo apartment out there, and start having hiring events. Talking on the phone, Zoom calls was out there, but we were meeting at the Amazon place. They had the building. It wasn't launched yet, but we could have interviews and sit in there. So I just got to work interviewing, hiring, staffing up.
So was the main way you hired through those Amazon hiring events, or did you use other means?
Indeed.
Okay.
We had an Indeed account, ZipRecruiter, Indeed, Facebook. We were just reaching out anything we could to get people to sign up and get on this opportunity.
What kind of guidance do you have in terms of what you're offering the drivers? How did you know what to offer them? How did you know how to pay them? How did you know, and what were you offering the drivers? What was, their compensation packages look like?
Amazon already has a minimum wage that you pay. So Amazon has that 401k. You have to give them 401k insurance, health, all this stuff. It's already
that's all set up.
Yeah, it's already, you put that straight into your ad from Amazon. The same copy.
Okay.
The same pay. It started at 15. Now it's 1975 is the minimum that I can pay my drivers, because Amazon says that. I couldn't pay them 15 if I wanted to, and it's my own company. Amazon sets the limit for.
You can pay them more, though.
Yeah, definitely can pay them more.
Okay, so there's a floor.
Yeah.
Which is, it started at that time, it was $15 per hour. Now it's like $19.75 or whatever the case may be.
Right.
All right, so you have that guidance, so you know how much you can pay. And you said in terms of all of the other compensation packages, like the workers, I mean, not workers, workers' comp, they have workers' comp, health insurance,
yeah. 401k.
All that, 401k, yeah. All that is through Amazon.
Yeah.
And they're all set up with that already.
You get them in like 90 days, you can get them to see if they stay, because there's a lot of turnover. But yeah, 90 days, you can usually offer them all that type of stuff.
Okay. Who's like taking care of like payroll, compliance, those type of things?
The people on my team in-house. I have my own in-house team that works and knows how to do payroll and all that type of stuff.
Where do you find those people in the beginning?
When I worked in Atlanta at Amazon, I took two people with me that were working with DSPs in Atlanta, and they came to work for me up there. So I had two people that was already veterans in the game.
So they moved out there with you?
Yeah.
Why would they have the faith to move out there with you on a new upstart?
Because it's me, and I gave them $5,000 to move out there with me.
I like the cause it's me part.
I gave him a bonus incentive to move, $5,000.
Okay.
We figured it out.
So they moved out there with you to Buffalo. You gave them $5,000 to relocate, and they were like your first. Those were your first hires.
Yeah, pretty much operations manager and like a compliance paperwork payroll type person. You
know? Okay,
has there ever been a moment where you had to jump into the van and do a delivery yourself?
Oh, yeah, I remember the first 6 months starting up, man, because I don't want to drop a route. Like if it comes down to it, one of my guys call off. If it got to get done, I'll get in the truck and do it.
How often does that still happen?
Nah, that don't happen no more. But it was maybe once or twice a month I'd end up driving a route in the beginning, 6 months. But that wasn't no problem. I mean, I didn't have nothing else to do. But I expected that. I was working 7 days a week. Why not?
Right.
I just wanted to get off to a good start, yeah.
Got you. And for the drivers, when they get on these routes, are they like giving like directions, like turn by turn?
Yes.
How does that work?
Yeah, we got phone devices, so pretty much your cell phone, but it's an Amazon app. I have like 70 lines with Verizon, and it's an Amazon app, the Amazon Flex app. So every morning they log in their username, password, and their route's already assigned. The zip code is basically like following the GPS on your phone, but it'd have package 1, 2, 3 to like 200. It'd tell you all your stops, how many packages goes to this stop, where to leave it at the customer. So Amazon has their own software that we put on our devices. And, it's pretty much turnkey software. Like, just think of Waze or Google Maps, but it's telling you where to drop the package at, the house and the address, all that information.
Yeah. Where do drivers typically make the most mistakes in? Is it delivery process? Is it the loading process? Like when mistakes happen, where do they commonly happen?
Most people, newer people, I would say, how you start your day is everything. If you get in there and don't organize your truck right from the beginning, you're going to have a horrible day. Because the packages come in sequences and orders. So if you out of order, you're going to be operating in chaos all day. So pretty much the morning, the loadout is the first most important part of the day where you load that vehicle. Amazon gives you 20 minutes to load the vehicle. You need to put it in order. They give you a sheet to show you the order that it goes into. And that's the most important part of the day.
Got it. So the driver loads the truck and then delivers it.
Yes.
Got it. So they have So they load it from the, I guess, the last stop in the nose, and then they go backwards to the first stop.
Yep.
Okay. Got you. Typically, how long does it get for it before a driver like really understands what they're doing and they're kind of trained up and you could be confident with them on the route? And do they have like trainers, or do they go out by themselves, or do you send them out with somebody?
Well, Amazon provides a training class for a 3-day training course. Before you can even touch a van, get on the road, you have to go through Amazon's training and pass it. And then once they do that, I put them with my driver trainer. So they get 2 or 3 days out on the road just working one-on-one with one of my best drivers. So they probably get 6-7 days a week of not even with Amazon training and 2 or 3 days with me before they can even get behind the wheel. They're working with my best drivers, my driver trainer, showing them the ropes of the job. And then the next week, we probably give them their own route.
Got it. In terms of like maintenance for equipment and stuff like that, like do you have like PM schedules? Like how often, how does that work? Like when you have to bring the vehicles in for maintenance and so forth?
Yeah, we got it. Amazon has a fleet team. I have a fleet manager. Shout out to Jacob. But it's so much tech and software with Amazon. It's tracking. You're going to get an alert. Truck number 26 needs an oil change coming up in 500 miles. Think of logistics, the old school logistics. But with Amazon being a tech company, they've integrated so much stuff that it's you have to be blind or not paying attention. It's so many alerts and emails that your truck needs an oil change, needs tires balanced, like the technology. Think of social media notifications, how we get those. They're doing that for the truck company with you.
After getting an overview of how the Amazon DSP business works, we wanted to get an idea of what made Sidney Tarver the successful entrepreneur he is today. We decided to head over to a place reminiscent of where he started, a field of dreams, if you will.
What's up, man?
What's up, buddy? How you
doing, man?
Good to
see you, man.
Sure.
I figured I'd bring you somewhere where, you know, you'd be comfortable, man.
This bringing back memories. I'm ready to do some drills right now. It got me ready out here. This bringing back the smell of the fresh grass. It's all bringing back memories.
For sure, man. How important is football in your life, man?
It was my identity for the first, I'd say, 22 years of my life. Football was my life. Eat, sleep, and breathe football with a little bit of academics, you know, in there. But this is my identity for the first 22 years of my life, being raised by a football coach and stuff like that, for sure.
For sure. Tell me how football translates into business.
Football translates into business because, a lot of the key components, you got to be disciplined. You got to wake up. You got to be the first one in the office, the last one out the office. If you really want to learn what you're doing, you have to be able to lead a team. It's not an individual sport. Yeah, you can be the best person, but if your team, you're only as strong as the weakest link on your team. So you need to get everybody on your team up to speed and up to the standard that you need to. Those are pretty much the discipline and the leadership is what it is for me, and the teamwork, team building.
Yeah.
I like working with team people. I know it's a lot of people who can do that, be good by themselves, be the shining star, but I'd rather see the whole team win.
For sure. Was that something that you had to develop, or do you feel like you just always innately had those skills and those abilities, or did football help you develop that?
It helped me develop it, because even in high school, I wasn't the best player on my – I was never always the best player on my team. I was just – I'm the guy who going to go to workouts. I'm going to do my work. I'm doing all the small stuff right by as one superstar athlete, but I'm doing the small stuff that eventually turning me – making me fast, making me strong. I'm just as that because I do it every day.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about football and business. You can build yourself into anything. Just because you start off as a small 100-pound kid, you leave 235 pounds big because you put the work in. You can see the actual results. And just like business, if you do something every day, consistently get better, learn, and fix it, you'll grow into a big business, from small business to a big business.
For sure. Tell me about after high school, you know, going to college. What college did you go to again? You went to
Tennessee State. Nashville.
HBCU.
HBCU.
Tell me about that transition, man, after high school going to HBCU. Yeah. Did you intentionally go to HBCU, or is that just kind of where you ended up? Just tell me about that.
Well, yeah, going from an all-white private high school to a HBCU was definitely a total change of worlds, like going from all-white people to an all-black college. It's just like it jumbled it up. But yeah. I went on a visit with my friend. I went to 10 college visits, but I went to this last one with my friend, Rico, from where I'm from. He played for my dad, actually, in high school.
Okay.
So I knew the guys, and we went on our visit, and we had so much fun on the visit. It just felt like we were going to play with our family. That's how I made the decision going there. And they had good academics program. Oprah was one of the graduates. Our famous alumni probably is Oprah. Yeah.
Okay, that's so, where Oprah went.
Yeah, she went to our college.
Man,
so
you don't get no more famous than
so
that,
we
bro.
Had that. We got good academics and education, so it was the best of both worlds, man. Partying, bands, cookout, fraternities, all that stuff. Like, just like the movies, man. It was just like that.
Yeah, how did you balance athletics, being an athlete, and then being an academic in college?
Yeah, the student athlete, they put emphasis on student. I mean, after practice, we'd have to go to study hall for an hour to do our homework. So every day we were after practice. So you tired, you still got to put an hour in of doing your homework. So it was structured. You had people helping you pick your classes and make sure you're on the right track, tutors and all that stuff to keep you focused. It was pretty much a full-time job playing, being a student athlete. You got to wake up at 6 a.m, go lift weights, go eat breakfast, go to your classes, go to practice, watch film, go to study. So 8-10 hours out of the day, I had places to be at all times, kind of like a full-time job.
Yeah. Were you looking to get drafted into the NFL? Was that a dream of yours?
It never was a dream. I knew I was good enough to play at the next level, but like you said, my parents just, Sydney, just if you do anything, just make sure you graduate and get that degree.
Yeah.
Anything else was extra. So I went to college to get the degree. And the NFL just happened to be the extra gift that came, you know, from putting in the work.
Got you. But so you didn't get drafted, but you did decide to go into the NFL.
Yeah.
What made you decide to, as opposed to, you know, following your degree? You know, you do have a degree in logistics. Yeah. What made you go into the NFL first, just to kind of get that, burn that desire out? Yeah. Or what was that about?
You definitely got to. I mean, that's still a dream. You definitely, everybody, if from the day you start playing football, you dream to go to the NFL because that's what you're aspiring to be. You're watching it. You're doing it for that. So to receive a paycheck off of the skills, the football that I've been playing for 12 or 15 years for free, to get paid to make, like, be a professional at something, it's a big accomplishment, and I don't take it lightly. So very exciting, great opportunity. And but I want people to know, like, the business of it. Like, football's cool. But life after football, you know the statistics. A lot of athletes go broke after they're done playing. They can't do anything. Their body banged up, concussions. Their mind's bad. So I just want the athletes to know it's other paths. Everybody's not going to go pro. And you need to have another plan when your dream comes to an end.
Yeah. And what made you major in logistics? I mean, that's not a very popular major at all. How'd you get into that?
Yeah, I wanted to be a pharmacist. I don't know why I wanted to be a pharmacist, probably because I thought they made a lot of money at the time when I was a kid. I used to hear doctors, lawyers, you know, you hear the certain fields, but it's all the money.
Right.
But I took a chemistry class and I was like, yeah, this not going to work with football practice. Like I didn't have enough time to put into the pharmacy field. And I talked to one of my friends, big brothers. I was like, what's your major? I'm thinking about changing. He was like, look at supply chain logistics. And I just took that leap of faith from there, blind, didn't know what it was. I just figured if I get into business, because you hear business, like I'll be able to do something with business. Like I can't go wrong.
Yeah. And when you got into it, was it challenging in learning about supply chain logistics? Because it's brand new to you.
Yeah.
Was it a challenging thing for you?
It wasn't challenging. I know just about class, like everything. You just got to show up. I knew if I showed up every day and applied myself, I could at least make a C to pass and get a degree. I'm a fan of C's, get degrees, just the bare minimum to pass to the next level. You know what I'm saying? So I was there showing up every day. I might not have been the smartest student, but I did enough to get by, had a good relationship with my teachers and professors and made a way.
Got it. And you play football for a year after you graduate,
yeah.
Right? You're a walk-on with the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns, and then I got picked up on the practice squad by the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Got you.
For that year.
And how much were you making on the practice squad?
About $6,500 a week.
Okay. Yeah. And you do that for about a year, you said?
Yeah.
All right. So you're in the NFL for, you know, a year.
Yeah.
You realize that dream.
Yeah.
What happens next?
You know, I came back home. After I got cut, it was a little bit like right before Christmas. Me and my buddy, we worked out at this gym, and he had played 10 years in the NFL, Tony Brown. And we looked at each other, and we was just like, we both had that look like, it's over, it's time to the next phase of life. He went on to be a football coach at a local college we have, and I took the opportunity to go to Chesapeake, Virginia to start working for Damco. A guy named Terry Philpott gave me my first real job, real shot, making $50,000. As being like a supervisor in a warehouse company.
How did it feel for you emotionally, like to, because like when you're in the NFL, you're like at the top of the world, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to go get a regular job.
Yeah.
Did that impact you at all emotionally? Did it not feel like that for you?
It didn't really feel like that for me because I was just grateful for that, the opportunity that I got to go. Like I knew in my mind that I had accomplished something that most people that I knew were never going to make it to that level. So I had already had that level of understanding. I was grateful for that opportunity, but I move forward very fast. I move on very fast. So I just checked that off the box and went into corporate America with the attitude, not going in. I went to the NFL. I didn't come in there with that attitude. I came, hey, I'm at the bottom again. I want to learn. It's just starting from the bottom and learning your skills back up.
Did you ever use it like telling people you're in the NFL to never like help you at all in corporate America?
I say it at the right times. Like, you know, you got to bring it out at the right times, but yeah. I just don't lead with it. Like, usually somebody else will say it or somebody will do it, but I'm not just out here braggadocious and boasting about it. I use it at the right time.
Right. Somebody who's interested. Like, I used to play for the Browns. Yeah. Browns fan, I used to play for them.
Yeah, you got to use it at the right times. But
for sure.
I want to be rather known as a businessman, you know, because I've seen people that are no muscles, no nothing, making billions of dollars, and I'd rather be like that and not have to get hit and do concussions and all that kind of stuff. So
right.
Business is my favorite sport now, you know?
There you go. So you get started. I like that. Business is my favorite sport.
I like that.
So you get started at Damco. How much are you making? How much do they pay you?
$50,000. And they gave me a $5,000 bonus to move up there. So I like that.
Okay.
I like bonuses. I like signing bonuses. That's the NFL part of it. I like that kind of stuff.
You like those bonuses?
Yeah.
And what are you doing at Damco?
Just managing operations, forklift, unloading, labor, just accounts, shipping, trucks, shipping, supply chain, customer service. The guy, Terry Philpott, he was just giving me a crash course in the full spectrum of when a container comes from China, we unload it from the port, we put it on a truck, we drive it to a warehouse, we unload it, we put it into another trailer and ship it. So he was giving me the full, from the customer service to the billing, he was giving me the full perspective of like the supply chain.
Mm.
Like a year intro into it, just 3 months in this department, 3 months in that department, and the full spectrum.
Got it. So he's like a mentor to you.
Yeah, one of my guys to this day.
Did you feel like you were using your degree to its fullest potential?
See, I, I'm more of the networking, like the degree is cool, but I feel like if you have the right relationships, you can get into any room or that way. So I had learned at an early age that the networking to bring you more opportunities than me just filling out 1,000 job applications. Let me see who is in my immediate network that has a job or is in a position of power that can bring me onto their team if we had the right conversation.
Got it.
So I'm more of that. Like, I do it more like that.
I love that. And you stay with Damco for how long?
About 3 years.
3 years, and then after that, what happens?
I had to get a better opportunity with Amazon. Amazon came calling, did the interview.
We are here live at OTR Solutions HQ. I'm here with my partner, Jonathan. Man, listen, factoring is an integral part of the transportation industry. Why is factoring important?
Absolutely, Rommel. In this economy, in this market, cash flow is king. Cash flow is the key to growth. If you have a young trucking company, or if you've been in the industry for years and you want to take that business to the next level, we're absolutely a company that can help. So I hope you'll give us a call today. Let us know what we can do to help you out.
Get the rest and roll with the best. Let's go.
They did another signing bonus. They gave me like $25,000 to sign with them. And 75 shares of Amazon stock when it was at $500 a share.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was the sign-on package to go to Amazon. I had to stay
for
4 years.
How much is that stock worth now? You know? You still got it?
Yeah. It was at $3,500, but then it split back down to $100. So it's probably like $100,000 worth of stuff. Yeah.
Nice.
For sure.
Nice. Yeah,
that was a good present from them. I appreciate that.
That's a beautiful present. That's not bad at all.
Nah, for sure.
All right. So you work for Amazon doing similar to what you were doing at Damco?
Yeah. Just warehousing functions, managing people. If you've never worked in a warehouse, it's a lot of team building and moving boxes, unloading trucks, loading them back on other trucks. So basic warehouse functions. But they had just now started getting into the DSP business of delivering their own packages. They got into this business because FedEx and UPS had failed them during the peak season. So Amazon's like, how can we deliver our own packages without any headaches? So they start building up their own in-house team to deliver all their own packages. And I was a part of that for the last 5 years until I started my own company.
Got it. How was that when they started doing that? Was it crazy? Was it like hectic? I'm trying to figure that process out.
Yeah, it was a startup, man. People look at Amazon and think it's this big corporate organized that. No, it was literally, hey, man, put that box on. Like, we over there yelling like, you wouldn't think it's a $1 billion company if you go inside an Amazon warehouse sometimes, you know?
Right.
It was a startup. So if you've ever been a part of a startup, you know it's just. You just sprinting really for a long time until you get it off the ground and then you can start a build around it. But it was tough at first. I ain't gonna lie. A startup, whether it's with a corporate company or you're starting up on your own, is one of the hardest phases of business to get through.
For sure. Yeah. Would you say you enjoyed your job?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I enjoyed it because coming from the other company, we was working 5, 6, 7 days. Amazon only works 4 days a week at manager positions, high level operations managers only doing 4 days. So when you get 4 days, you can kind of do that and then chill for 3 more days. It was kind of different going into there. So yeah, I loved it. It taught me everything.
Got it. And you worked with them for how long before you get
5 years?
5 years.
Yeah.
And then you get the opportunity to be a DSP.
Yes, sir.
How does that opportunity come to you?
The opportunity came just working with the DSP owners. They kept, hey, Sydney, like, why aren't you doing this? They knew I knew my job well. And I was trying to go the corporate route. I wanted to keep elevating in corporate America, but that wasn't my calling. I wanted to get to that $100,000 a year job. That was like, I don't know why that was the dream. Like, once I get to $100,000, I'm going to feel like I made it. But I only got to $72,000, and then the way up was looking way harder than I anticipated. So I took that leap of faith and started my own business where I could get myself a raise. So that's how I thought about it.
All right. So as a business owner, what are the things that you have to look at in order to be profitable? How does one Amazon DSP to the next, how do they compare? Like, how are you more profitable than the other DSP? Or are you guys all kind of like apples and apples where you're like kind of the same profitability? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much you managing labor is going to be your biggest cost. So do you have too many drivers? Do you have too many people just in the build, in the operation? You need to run a lean operation.
How do you do that?
I know what it, I've just been in the business. So I know that, like, say if you have 25 routes, okay, you're going to need 25 drivers. You might need two dispatchers in there, somebody to hand out the keys in the morning, somebody to put the keys up at night, and maybe one extra rescue guy to kind of filter out and help people on the road type guy. But that could be a dispatcher. So I just know how to run lean. But it's the route. The route counts is what's going to let you know. Some DSPs are running 20 routes. Some are running 30. Some are running 40. It just depends on where you fall at the route count. But you're going to be able to be profitable. Amazon sets you up to be profitable in this business. If you're not profitable, it's probably because of something you're doing on your own.
Got it. And with your route specifically, so you're in the Niagara Falls area, or do you run at all outside of that area? You're just kind of like in the...
I live in Niagara Falls, but our truck is in Hamburg by the Buffalo Bills Stadium. So okay. I used to be in the Tonawanda area, but I took a move. Amazon asked me to move, so I just moved stations down. They opened a new one up in Hamburg, so we've been doing that for the last about 6 months.
Okay. And how are you – talk to me about how you're, like, awarded new routes and how you scale, right? Because you said you started with five in 2018.
Yeah.
Or was it 18 or 20?
20.
2020, and then you started to grow. And where are you at now? You have
– Right now we're like 25 after peak season. We was running like 40 a day during peak, but it just – the volume trailed out with Amazon. It usually happens after peak season. So everybody – all DSPs are like, my volume went back down after peak season.
Yeah. Got it. So about 20, 25, right? So you stay around there. How does that work? How do you scale with Amazon, and how do you know when you're ready to add more routes, add more equipment? Just tell me about that.
Yeah, they have this – every week you get a scorecard metric of how your team performs. So it'll be a rating, poor, great, fantastic, fantastic plus.
And that's what it's called? Poor, great, fantastic, fantastic plus.
Yeah, they're going to rate you one of those metrics every week.
Okay.
So if you hit fantastic or fantastic plus, they're going to pay you a bonus. If you just get great, you just get great. And poor, you just get poor. Like, you don't get anything. But you get a rate in every quarter. Like, they see how did you do that quarter, how many fantastic plus, and then they go to this thing called volume share. So they'll be like, okay, you have 11% of the station's volume share. We're going to move you up because you've been performing good in the top one. They're going to move you up by how well your scorecard is.
All right, cool. So you said safety, compliance, and then quality.
Yeah.
And those are the three main things?
Yeah, those are the three. I might be missing something on the scorecard, but I know safety is the biggest. If you mess up safety, you're going to automatically be great. If you don't get safety right, which is good, that's how it should be, because you don't want any fatalities, nothing out there on that road, man. It's serious out there, you know what I'm saying?
So, for sure. Yeah. So if you get that fantastic plus, that means you pretty much ran a flawless week. Everything was good. You said at that point you get a bonus.
Yeah.
How much is that bonus? Is that something for the drivers or something for you as a business?
Well, it come to the business, but I give it out to the drivers.
Does everybody do that? Or is that something that you've just chosen to do?
I give it to my people. Whatever I can do for my people, I can
people
give it
first.
To them. Yeah, for sure. some people probably don't, but I usually always have been giving gift cards, or we'll put the top five drivers a $100 bonus in their next paycheck, or get them some food, whatever we do.
Yeah. Is it something that the drivers are aware of, that bonus? Is that something that's more so like, okay, so they know you guys get it.
Yeah, they know if we hit Fantastic Plus this week, somebody finna get something.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're incentivized to do a great job because they know that there's a reward at the end.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, that's cool. Oh, another thing I wanted to cover. You said team share. Can you explain that again for me real quick?
The volume share. So each station has, I don't know, say 50,000 packages. The performing DSPs are going to get, if you're doing good, you're going to get 10, 20%. It just... your share goes up or down depending on how good you perform.
So you're getting more work, in essence.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, got it. And then how does it work when you're awarded more routes? Like, are those routes being taken away from somebody else and given to you?
Most likely, or the volume just went up and everybody get a bigger share. But usually, somebody is going to go up or down depending on
performance. And that's based on their performance. So if somebody's not doing good in a certain area, they're saying, hey, Sydney, I need you to take this on because they can't handle it.
Right.
How do DSPs get along with each other?
It's fine. I mean, you really see what the thing with the DSP is, I only see my drivers maybe in an hour because they dispatch in the morning and then they on the road for 10 hours. So I'm only... you really only up there for like an hour or 30 minutes a day, maybe. And you're not seeing it. You're focused on getting your team loaded out. So it's not a lot of talking to this Johnny over here from this DA. It's not like that. not in my, I do my business and get out of there. But I got some guys when we meet up and have the Amazon meetings and we talk about the business, but it's pretty, everybody to themselves.
Really?
You know what I'm saying? But so, I got so DSP friends and owners that do that, this.
That's what I was going to say. So there's like no, like where you guys like talk about best practices and different things or ways you can run the business better?
They got a Ignite. Amazon got its own Ignite community app where DSPs are on there. But I talk to my people amongst each other, but it's pretty like private. Like everybody keep their business to themselves from what I've experienced.
What would you say was the most difficult part about getting started for you personally? Once you started to get in the business up and running, what was the most challenging aspect?
It's just that the hiring, the people, everybody knows how to operate the business. It's the people that are going to be unpredictable in the business. I got to going and then 2 years, one of those first two employees I told you, I had to fire the two people that helped me start my company. I had to fire one of those, like a key part of my company. And that was like starting over, but you want to get rid of the part people that you don't need on your team fast.
Yeah.
So people hiring is still a challenge every day. I'm constantly evaluating, hey, does this person align with our business model? Are they meeting the requirements? Because everybody wants to get better. We want to get better each and every year. We don't just get complacent and stick with the status quo. I want everybody to keep elevating their game every year or we'll swap you out for a new person. You know what I mean?
Why did you have to fire him? What happened?
Just got too comfortable, too many excuses, and didn't want to grow with the company in the way we were growing. So it hurt. Yeah, I had to get in there and get my hands dirty again and do some stuff that I might not have wanted to do. But ultimately, it helped push our company to the next level because you want to have the whole team operating on the same, you know what I'm saying, level, everybody comfortable, and you got to get rid of the rotten apples ASAP.
Oh, another thing I wanted to cover, you said team share. Can you explain that again for me real quick?
The volume share. So each station has, I don't know, say 50,000 packages. The performing DSPs are going to get, if you're doing good, you're going to get 10, 20%. It just, your share goes up or down depending on how good you perform.
So you're getting more work,
yeah,
in essence.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, got it. And then how does it work when you're awarded more routes? Like, are those routes being taken away from somebody else and given to you?
Most likely, or the volume just went up and everybody get a bigger share. But usually, yeah, somebody is going to go up or down depending on
performance. And that's based on their performance. So if somebody's not doing good in a certain area, they're saying, hey, Sydney, I need you to take this on because they can't handle it.
Right.
How do DSPs get along with each other?
It's fine. I mean, you really see, with the thing with the DSP is I only see my drivers maybe in an hour because they dispatch in the morning and then they on the road for 10 hours. So you really only up there for like an hour or 30 minutes a day, maybe. And you're not you're focused on getting your team loaded right out. So it's not a lot of talking to this Johnny over here from this DA. It's not like that. Not in my, I do my business and get out of there. But I got some guys when we meet up and have the Amazon meetings and we talk about the business, but it's pretty, everybody to themselves.
Really?
You know what I'm saying? But so, I got DSP friends and owners that do this.
That's what I was going to say. So there's like no like where you guys like talk about best practices and different things or ways you can run the business better?
They got Amazon got its own Ignite community app where DSPs are on there. But I talk to my people amongst each other, but it's pretty like private. Like everybody keep their business to themselves from what I've experienced.
All right. In terms of Amazon paying you, are you paid weekly? How does a pay work? And are you paid hourly per package? Explain how everything breaks down.
Net 7. So every 7 days, usually every Saturday, I get paid by Amazon from the previous week. And yeah, they pay us for the hour, by the hour. They give us a certain hourly rate. Between $30 and $40 an hour for 10-hour routes. So they pay us by the hour, and then it's like a per-package bonus, maybe a few, I think 5 cents a package they pay you that you get delivered that week. So that, and then if you hit your incentives, though, the Fantastic and Fantastic Plus, that 5 cent doubles and then triples if you hit that bonus.
Okay.
So it's an hourly for hour. Billable hours, so you can pay your drivers 10-hour routes. They pay you a set amount per hour, and then a per piece count, and then it bonuses and doubles and triples if you hit your right bonus.
So financially, in the 3 years you've been in business, about how much has People First, in terms of revenue, what have you guys done?
We did about $10 million in revenue, for sure. About $3.5 million every year. Yeah.
Okay.
for sure.
That's amazing, man.
Do you ever feel like an Amazon employee still, or having this business, do you feel like completely liberated, like it's your own thing? How is that relationship? Because you're still, you know, you're still working for Amazon in a way, right?
I definitely feel, and I have all my eggs are in one basket, if we're saying that from a business perspective, but I don't feel like they can't tell me to do this, this, and this. I still have that control. I need to hit the metrics and hit their numbers and comply to their standards, but they're not in my business. Like, Sydney, you need to do this, this, and this.
Right.
But I've been working on diversifying and just trying to figure out what else is next for me. Outside of Amazon, with Amazon, can we take this relationship to another level? So I've just been exploring those things.
That's a great segue. Like, how do you think about leveraging the foundation that Amazon has given you into, like you said, putting your eggs in other baskets and diversifying a bit? Like, how do you go about that? Or how would you go about that? Or what are you thinking about? How are you thinking about going about that?
Yeah, I've been working, wrote the book. I've made my own online community. I started making merch, hats. I've been doing speaking events, speaking to kids about entrepreneurship. So just trying to step into my own personal brand. Nonprofit. I got a nonprofit foundation that actually Amazon gave me $5,000 for last year. I won a pitch competition for my nonprofit. So
okay.
I want to revisit that with Amazon and see if I can do some, maybe teach trucking in communities under the Amazon umbrella, just with nonprofit people doing that type of stuff. So just seeing how I can build my brand, monetize more. We've been shooting content, just really figuring it out day by taking it a day at a time and just slowly building, meeting new people, networking with great people like yourself to
appreciate that.
Build my knowledge and take my game to the next level.
What about from a, because that's more of like a, from a personal brand standpoint, what about from an operational standpoint, like building a transportation company? Would you, is there a way for you to leverage the opportunity Amazon gave you to like do transportation for other people? Like, that's kind of more what I'm thinking about.
No, I've got on LinkedIn, a lot of people write me and send me contracts about moving furniture contracts, and I just have to set my company up or partner with the right people to do that, because I don't want to go back to startup mode again and do that. I would rather already partner with existing people and see what we can put our minds together to build an operation instead of me doing the heavy lifting again all by myself. But I'm definitely open to other contracts outside of Amazon.
But are you able to do that? Like, you can take those same, because the employees are your employees. They work for people first.
For sure.
Right? So you can take them and put them on other routes and do other things. It's not like they're tied to just solely Amazon routes.
Nah, as long as I cover an Amazon, making them happy, if I got extra 20 extra drivers and I get a contract at Lowe's, Walmart, or somewhere else, Target, I could definitely run an operation with them.
Yeah. Tell me, what do you do for your own personal development and self-development as a leader? Are you a reader? Do you like podcasts? What are some of the things that you do to build yourself up?
Man, it started with reading. I probably started back reading in 2017. I probably didn't read a book since I graduated college in 2011. So I took a lot of time off and just work, live life. But then it hit me. I'm not leveling up. I'm like, what am I doing? So I started back reading heavy 2017, and that's been one of the biggest things. Podcasts have definitely helped me. Great people like you. It's a lot of great platforms out there doing their thing in the podcast game. Also, I'd say probably personal development, conferences and all that. I probably invested over $250,000 in my education on going to conferences, working with mentors, learning internet skills, ads, building websites. Just, I've probably invested over $250,000 in my own education, self-education.
What's a book that you would recommend for any business leader to read?
The book that did it for me was How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Just learning how to talk to people. A lot of people don't know how to talk to people, or how to have body language or have a conversation with somebody that's a stranger, somebody that you don't know. How do you meet more people than you knew all your life, if that makes sense? How do you get outside your original network? How do you connect with that business owner over there across the street? So you need to have people on your team, people who like you, people who want to see you do well in the world. Because, a lot of times that immediate circle and family and friends, you love them to death, but to get to where you're going, you're going to have to step outside of that circle and meet some new people who might not look like you. They might not talk like you. You know what I'm saying? So How to Win Friends and Influence People was one that really changed my life.
I love that. And how important is networking as it relates to business?
Networking is cliche. Like they say, that's your net worth. Because think of all the people you hang around right now. Are they getting you to where you want to be in life right now? And if the answer is no, that means you need to get a new network of friends. It's that simple.
Yeah.
The people, my family, my dad, football coach, my mom, teacher, they education. They didn't know business. But they're good people, but they're not my business mentors. I didn't learn business from them. You know what I'm saying? They taught me how to handle my business and do that. But real business, P&Ls, I have to go find people who know how to do that. Professionals in industry, I have to go find the pros, like football. I wouldn't go to a plumber to learn how to play football. I have to go learn from the best.
So, right.
You know what I mean?
So, right. Got you. If you had to leave the audience with a final thought, just something that entrepreneurial or something spiritual or something that you just want to leave them with, What would that be?
Yeah, just keep going, you know. Bad times never last, you know. Every storm runs out of rain. The sun always come back up. So just keep fighting. I know it ain't easy. It ain't easy for nobody. So just keep fighting. Keep putting one foot in front of the other, taking steps forward, and keep building. You'll be something one day. You just got to keep building and going through life. Don't quit.
If you twisted, confused, or stuck about trucks, don't be dumb. This is the place to come. Truck and Hustle. Let's go!